Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here with...
Chris.
Lee. Oh.
We're racing.
We are.
We've had... Wow. Yeah, that's all I can say. Wow.
Absolutely. No Dan here this week.
No Dan this week. No. Get well soon, mate.
Absolutely. Probably a bit ill, getting up a little bit early on Sunday morning.
Yeah, well, he did have a gig on Saturday night and... He's not too bad, he's just got no voice left, which kind of isn't useful for doing what we're doing tonight.
No, that's it. So, yeah, we'll see you soon again, Dan.
We'll do the talking for you, mate.
Yeah, racing.
Racing, sacked. However. we'll start with a little bit of news, because a couple of stories come out since Sunday morning. The first one being the teams and Charlie Whiting have all got together, and qualifying has definitely been confirmed as going back to how it used to be.
At least for Bahrain.
Although Toto says elimination qualifying may be back. I can't do Austrian.
May be back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Toto.
Yeah, in some form or another.
Yeah.
What do we think?
Well, if I'm going to be brutally honest, I had things to do Saturday morning, such as work, so I didn't actually see the qualifying. I watched the highlights show, which didn't actually show much of Q1 or Q2.
Which is a shame, because that's where most of the action was.
Which I'm led to believe that's where most of the action was. What I did see was almost all of Q3, which is what, you know, it's supposed to be the sharp end of qualifying, where all the good stuff happened. It was a bit farcical, it was a bit boring. And a lot was made about Vettel being able to change out of his race overalls and into his team shirt and jeans in time for the press conference. To be honest with you, I think he did that to make a point. I think he was like, I'm going to do it now, and got changed quicker than he normally would have done anyway.
Yeah.
Just to make the point that, hey, look, I'm already in my jeans because this is rubbish.
Yeah. And basically everyone has said, well, that sucked.
The problem is, remember when the first lot of hoo-ha came up about the qualifying, and the proposed change was going to be an elimination style Q1, Q2, and then revert into the normal shootout Q3.
Yeah, and I think Bernie had the idea that the shootout in Q3 gave a reverse grid as well.
If they'd have gone with that idea of just having the elimination 1 and 2, then the shootout in Q3, we'd be sat here right now going, well, didn't that work well?
We might be. Was it Sky who was saying about the qualifying tyre? I know it messed up the new tyre rules and all the tyre strategies, etc., but I think if you could have the tyre that you bolted on for qualifying, it didn't matter what happened after qualifying, then this would work very well. But because everybody has to conserve, you know, their sets of tyres for the race to give themselves a better race strategy,
yeah,
what the team said might happen exactly happened towards the end of Q3. Was it like 4 minutes to go? The last lap time was set.
The only thing I can think about this would be that whoever's on the bubble, I don't know how you'd work it. You'd have to pause the clock time, you know. So if you're about to get eliminated and your 90 seconds is up,
yeah,
they need to be able to finish that flying lap for it to work.
Yeah.
Joe, because there was too much of that. Someone was halfway around a flying lap and they just timed out and they couldn't finish the lap.
Yeah, I think it was, can't remember if it was Q1 or Q2. Grosjean had been timed out and he got a lap in, which didn't count, which at the time would have got him third.
Yeah. Daniel Ricciardo was another one. He set his best first two sectors
on the lap he was eliminated.
Yeah, and then he was eliminated before the end of the third sector.
So we've said it before. There's not enough thought gone into it. Yeah.
See, this is the problem. I think in principle there is a really cool thing there, but hasn't been enough people.
Why
working
not?
Out.
Why not try it on GP2, GP3? Surely that's one of the things that they are there for.
Yeah, they are in a way, yeah.
But But the, I mean, the thing is, if you wanted to keep this just solely for Formula One, like, run it through some, like, simulation, like, computer simulations first.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sure you could even bloody, you could mod it into something like R Factor. Joe, if somebody wrote the thing, and then they could, even if they didn't do it as like an automatic simulation, then you could get 22 racing drivers to sit down and run the simulations, you know, just in front of computers doing it.
Yeah, they're already doing that in Formula E, but they're calling it the...
a sport.
There's now Formula E, I think.
Electronic E.
Yeah, they're playing video games, driving virtual Formula E cars around the circuit. Let's not even go there. Dan isn't here to defend it, and he's, well, I'd be defending the indefensible. One thing I do have to say, actually, about qualifying, while we're on the subject, I like the new graphics and the new timing setup, which I noticed in...
Is it bigger?
It's bigger, it's clearer, and the thing that... The new pit time graphics.
New pit time graphics are good. Just, you don't have to wait for a pit graphic to come up. It just comes up next to the name of the driver.
Yeah.
So yeah, well done on the FIA graphics team for that particular.
Yeah, they've actually done something really good.
Mm-hmm. What I did think was funny is, during the eliminating qualifying, did you notice that only after the first one or two people had been eliminated, then you got the clock timer for the 90 seconds on.
Yeah, they...
It was almost like there was someone in the back room doing it on the fly.
Apparently they had a couple of problems and it didn't start up when it was meant to.
Oh, right, okay.
So they had to turn it off and turn it back on again to get it working. Teething troubles, which is what usually happens with things like this when it's been a complete rush job.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was. Well, we're slagging things off.
But sorry, just quickly, I know you didn't see it, but while we're still in the qualifying, do you agree with me that Q1 was the best Q1 we've had ever?
Yeah, it was, because there were multiple runs and there were teams actually trying for it. And
there was drivers panicking as well and trying to get laps.
And they had something to aim for. Now, that might be something for the strategy group to take notice of.
I hope
why don't they just do one session with 90-second eliminations?
Because you'd then get the fast guys going out, the Mercs had set the times on the softest of soft tyres, and then they would just come back in because they know that they wouldn't be able to be beaten.
It would have worked with refueling as well.
What happened in Q3, and that you'd just stretch that out to a full 45-minute session.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
because that wouldn't work either, because then you'd have no cars on track for the last...
Hour.
Yeah.
See, the it would have worked back in the days of refueling as well, because the drivers could have done racing pit stops.
Yeah.
Whereas now they have to sit in the garage for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks to refuel a Formula One car.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I think they do it by pipette. They just transfer it from a big barrel out the back.
Health and safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wrapped in cotton wool, of course.
Yeah.
So ever since Eric Brillier stole all the piping things to put cream on his buns.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it was.
Talking of things that appear on TV, Australia is up in arms at the minute. Because...
Or are they down in arms?
Well, I suppose they're down under in arms.
Down under in arms.
If they were up in arms, they'd be even further down. Fuck. It's Monday. My brain hasn't kicked
that
in.
That was a joke, yet. Paul.
I know.
Fuck.
I'm sorry, I'll take it outside.
Sorry.
And have a shot.
Struth.
Now, you know how when you're paying for a TV service, like what we all do to watch the races?
Most of us, yeah.
Most of us, yeah. Yeah, what we legally do to watch the races.
Yeah.
Or when they're on a channel with advertising live, like they're going to be on Channel 4, mm-hmm. and advertising free from lights going out to the checkered flag. Apparently the Australian broadcaster made it split screen and put a load of adverts on one side of the screen every 20 minutes. So you got to see it, but you only got to see it pretty small.
Until the Aussies get ITV putting an advert in on the last lap.
And Jim Rosenthal.
Yeah, they can just suck it up, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah. This is why Formula One will never be on ITV again.
Suck it up, have a tinny, it's fine.
And this is why Channel 4 have said they're not doing advertising during the race.
Yeah,
because of ITV's amazing last lap. Oh, we're going to go adverts now.
Missing the checkered flag like Pele.
I thought my dad was going to explode that day.
I knew. I damn near did. I may have shouted a bit. Shouted like an angry Dutch teenage driver.
Oh, smooth.
Max Verstappen.
Yeah, what was he playing at?
He is, I believe the term, being a cunt.
I think I put on the live blog when we were doing it on Sunday morning that he was driving like an angry teenager. Oh, wait, hang on a second.
Stroppy teenager.
Yeah, hang on a second. He was an angry teenager.
We do have some exclusive in-car sounds from Max.
Do we?
Weekend. Yeah.
And that was about all we could play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest was just a baby crying.
Yeah.
I don't know whether... Is it to do with his age? Or is he just an arsehole?
Bit of both, I think.
Yeah.
Lee, have you got something to... Did he not say something in an interview about Carlos Sainz? Because he said he doesn't normally have a problem with team orders.
Yeah, but... team orders don't usually bother him because, quote, he's usually miles ahead of Carlos.
So he doesn't have to worry about team orders.
Yeah. So that's grand, that last year. What happens if now they've both got a year under their belts? What happens if he's not miles ahead? Is that the way Formula One works now? If you beat someone over the course of a single season, then that's the way it will work forever.
Yes. Just ask Fernando Alonso. He beat Michael Schumacher. He's won everything since then.
Oh.
Just ask Pastor Maldonado. He once beat the other 19 cars on the track.
He once beat Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the worst thing Alonso's ever bought? That massive trophy cabinet he bought after his second world championship.
Oh dear.
He's still convinced he'll win another, and that was before he bashed his head.
Just stood in front of this thing which has got like 16 holes in it, two trophies, going, I have buyer's remorse.
Oh well.
I think we better talk about the race. That is it for the news, because, well, there isn't really any more news.
Well, it's all race related.
It's all race related from here on in.
Yeah. Well, kind of Max Verstappen was a bit race-related, really, but...
No, we're just looking for any excuse to call him an absolute...
Wazzer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tool.
Yeah, what was that word I used to describe somebody earlier? I can't remember it. Scrunge or something.
Splodge.
Scrunt.
Spodger.
Spodger.
Did you see the pit interview with Carlos Sainz?
Yeah, he came across as very calm, very collected, mature.
But when they said about, have you spoke to anyone about the radio communications from Max? And he said, no, I haven't heard anything yet. And there was such a wry smile across his face as if to go, I think I know what's there.
Yeah, I haven't heard it, but I've got a good idea. Yeah.
It's like, have you heard the new Status Quo album? Yes, about 18 times for the last 18 years.
Carlos Sainz is only about 20, isn't he?
Yeah.
And
21.
I know there is a reasonable gap between being 18 and 20, isn't there? But
2 years.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, as in...
That's twice a long time in politics.
Yeah. As in
maturity.
A maturity growth, but the, like...
Yeah, no. I'm with you on this one, because I went out with you on your 18th birthday and we got inordinately drunk. And then I went out with you on your 21st birthday and we got inordinately drunk. Oh.
Yeah. maybe I'm not right. But... What I'm trying to say is that Carlos Sainz came across as being a man. And
well, Verstappen still coming across as a boy.
Yeah.
Racer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You're onto something with that, because he really does need to grow up and.
He needs to lighten up a bit as well, because being that tense during a race is not good for anyone.
And he looks like he's made of wax.
Wax Verstappen.
Yes.
we're gonna have to get a list of all the nicknames. Moving on to the race. Even Podcat wants to move on to the race. Well, we discussed qualifying briefly. Danny Kvyat was the first and only person to get caught out by elimination qualifying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, unless it returns, you'll be the only person to ever be caught out by it.
And didn't really help him in the race.
No, would he have done it if he hadn't been at the back of the grid? We don't really know what happened. An electronic failure.
The MGUH failed.
Right as he was lining up to take his spot on the grid.
Yes.
And then we had the aborted start. And the aborted start meant another parade lap. And
more parades than Disneyland.
Yep. So we had the extra parade lap on the first race of the season. And then the start, or the lack thereof, from the two cars at the front.
Lewis isn't as good at starting with the single clutch.
No.
This happened at the end of last season after they got rid of the double clutch
mm-hmm.
regulation. And he's just carried it on. And maybe he should have spent more time in testing and in practice learning how to start the car quickly, or even on the simulator.
To be fair, he didn't get a much worse start than Rosberg. Ferrari started brilliantly.
Yeah.
And at the first corner, Rosberg sort of... Well, they did touch, Rosberg and Hamilton did touch in the first corner of the first race. Luckily, there was no damage. It just put Hamilton so offline that Verstappen went past as well. I think Massa, was it Massa went past as
yeah.
well? Yeah. Felipe Massa managed to squeeze his way through.
He did.
So, Lewis's only other option was to do what Pastor Maldonado did last year, which was we just bid it into the side of the car who was overtaking him and go out on the second turn. And... I think he's probably a bit more mature than that, knowing that he probably would get a chance to come back later in the race. Of course, he did.
Yeah.
He was, what, seventh when he...
Seventh
at the red flag. At
the red flag,
which
yeah.
we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, a terrible start for Mercedes. And like you say, we saw it in the middle part, didn't we, sort of just after the summer break, Mercedes starting quite poor. Well, it was Britain was the first one, wasn't it? Because Williams completely obliterated...
Yeah,
Mercedes
yeah,
off the line
yeah when Massa and Bottas got away and then Williams forgot how to win a race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if Ferrari have latched onto this and have an excellent starting procedure, all they need to do now is get their race strategy right.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to take a fight to Mercedes. But the first part of the race for Ferrari looked very, very strong. Vettel, after only a couple of laps, was already 2-3 seconds ahead. It was like watching Red Bull Sebastian Vettel.
It's good to see
it was like watching Red Bull Sebastian Vettel, but fun at the same time.
Oh, yeah. He's hilarious at the moment.
It was good to see that half a second that Hamilton had on the Ferraris in qualifying didn't translate
into the
race pace.
No,
yeah. Because when that happened, I was thinking, if he just pulled half a second out of his ass... You know, is this just going to be another Mercedes year?
And but it wasn't a half a second in race pace.
No, I was listening to the second best Formula One podcast on the internet today, the Five Live one, and I can't remember. It's one of the Beeb guys was mentioned that he's looking forward to seeing what Ferrari do in Bahrain, because last year Ferrari were really well, not really bad, but. Worse in Australia because they were fighting with the Williams
in Australia.
Yeah, in Australia.
They were stronger at Bahrain.
They were stronger over the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So he's saying if that translates this year, you might see a Ferrari which is just on pace with Mercedes.
Yeah,
you know, from this point on.
Yeah, you know, like we had that battle between Rosberg and Hamilton a couple of years ago. That would have been fantastic. If we could make that four-way battle between Raikkonen and Vettel, Rosberg and Hamilton, sort of in Bahrain,
yeah,
the four of them dicing it'd be like old Formula One.
Must say, I think if it wasn't for the red flag and the way the pit strategies worked and the fact that Kimi dropped out, if all things being equal, I think Rosberg would have struggled to be on the podium.
Possibly. I think both Mercedes drivers would have struggled to be on the podium.
Well, I think Hamilton would have probably crawled his way through, you know, over the thing, over the course of the race. But Rosberg, although he won a race, he didn't have the pace of a race winner. Joey, even when
I think he just backed off towards the end when he knew that.
I'm sure he did back off, but even before that, you know, he wasn't on pace with Hamilton or you know, Hamilton behind him when he was in clear air, or Vettel ahead of him. So I don't think this is quite the Rosberg resurgency.
I don't know, because I mean he had a sizable gap. Was it a case of just
manage the gap,
save everything on the car?
I'm sure after the pit, after the red flag, and they knew the strategy. He knew Hamilton was getting held up with other people. He knew he had the mediums on, and Ferrari had fucked the tyres. Yo, so it's, I'm sure from that moment on, he knew all he needed to do was be consistent and win the Grand Prix. Mm. But I think if that wasn't...
Up to that point.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that crash, I think he'd have... I don't think he'd have won the race. I think Vettel would have.
Talking of the crash, Fernando, wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
An incredible accident, possibly the most spectacular accident we've seen in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I can't think of one that was as terrifying looking since Kubica in Canada in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of course, we had the awful accident where you know, Jules Bianchi was, you know, eventually died from his injuries. But I mean, we didn't see the incident. We didn't see that accident. It wasn't a spectacular accident where the car was flying through the air, and then when the dust cleared, it was like just a crumpled heap left. And
well, Chris, we were watching the race together, and they showed the overhead shot of Gutierrez's car.
We didn't even spot them.
We didn't even see Alonso. Hang on, there's a car on its top over there. I'm like, what? Oh bloody hell!
Yeah, part of a car.
Shit. And then we just saw Alonso walking out.
Yeah, walking out how exactly? We're not quite sure. I don't think even Alonso is quite sure how he managed to walk out. But the impressive thing is that he had the presence of mind to get out of the car, because he knew his mother was watching on television and he wanted to make sure that she knew he was okay. So
you could not get any more Spanish than that.
So props to Fernando for thinking I should get out of the car and say my mum knows I'm all right. At least he didn't think he was 13 years old and it was 1995.
Maybe
shocking.
He did. Maybe.
Shocking.
maybe he thought it was like 1989. He was trying to get out of the car because he thought he'd be in trouble.
I mean, it's testament to the improved safety these days.
It is. Absolutely.
As somebody who writes a technical Formula One blog put on Twitter, just proves that all the safety features did its job. The wheel tethers worked by pulling the suspension underneath the car.
Yeah.
The safety cell remained completely intact, and the zones designed to crumple soaked up the energy.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't transferred, or the minimum amount of it was transferred through to Fernando.
Yeah.
And the hands system did its job as well.
Yeah.
Because he was fully checked over by FIA medical staff and pronounced officially okay.
Yeah.
I think he was fully checked over by Kimi. How is he? It's okay.
Yeah. we'll get to Kimi in a bit, but you know, it was just the it was quite a scary looking accident, and for Alonso to just walk up to Gutierrez, shake his hand, and sort of just kind of accept that it was a racing incident more than anything, rather than. Yeah, because it'd be so easy to be.
It shows the experience of Alonso that
it does. Yeah, it shows like how much of a gentleman he is as well.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the incident, looking at the replays, you can see why they've decided no further investigations are needed into how it happened. It was a racing thing. Gutierrez moved once.
And braked very early. Well, not very early.
Braked earlier than Alonso did when they showed the 3D simulation, which, Lee, I believe you have opinions on the 3D simulation.
Yeah, they need to stop using the Amstrad to render it, make it look pretty.
Yeah, but it's all sort of telemetry, isn't it? So it's better to have
telemetry can look pretty.
I'm a web developer, so as long as the data's right, that's all that matters. You just leave the site to the designers.
Yeah, that's it. Yes, as long as it's clear enough that you can see the information.
Yeah, but he would say something like that because he colours in for a living. Yeah.
Bra sizes are proof that you can get sexy numbers.
I didn't say that you couldn't. I don't know where did that come from.
Because it's just telemetry, isn't it? So we can have sexy numbers in telemetry as well.
Yeah, all right, yeah, if you want.
So I don't quite know where we're going to go from that. So yeah, we had the red flag, extra round of pit stops, or in the
free
case of
pit stops,
free pit stop really, and in the case of Grosjean, his pit stop.
Yeah.
And with that, the tyre changes, or not?
No, that everybody changed the tyres, I think.
They took the tyres off and reheated them. But everyone, a lot of drivers went back to the same ones that they just put on in the pit stops, because it happened just after the pit stop window.
Yeah.
And this is where Ferrari started to go wrong.
Ferrari decided they were going to put on super softs, which...
Softs, wasn't it?
No, super softs.
Oh, it was supposed
to be,
sorry.
Which was supposed to be the fastest tyre. As a very aggressive strategy, because what they wanted to try and do was build a gap so that they would be able to have another pit stop for another set of softs towards the end of the race and still be pretty quick and win the race spectacularly, miles ahead of anyone who put mediums on, like the Mercedes did.
Yeah, because the strategy was they didn't have any data on the mediums and how long they'd last. And they were taking a gamble that the mediums were going to fall off as well, and nobody would be able to do 40, just shy of 40 laps.
When they said the mediums would do about 35, was what they said. How Mercedes did, was it something ridiculous, like 800 laps on the medium tyre in testing?
Yeah.
So they knew that medium tyre was able to do...
But,
a bit more
it was still a gamble for them. Different circuit,
different
temperatures.
Yeah, different conditions, but... They know the medium tyre very well. Ferrari didn't.
Yeah, if it had worked and they had got the gap and the mediums had fallen off the cliff, we would now be sat here saying Arriva Benny is a genius.
Yeah.
Instead, we're saying, well, they gambled and it didn't pay off this time.
The problem I have with this is Ferrari looked like they had the pace to race Mercedes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unless
they were ahead for,
unless Mercedes weren't Ferrari weren't paying attention to what Mercedes were doing. If that's the case, if there was no possible way until the blankets were taken off the tyres and it was time to go, if there was no possible way for Ferrari to have known that Mercedes had mediums on, right? Fine, you know it's. They might have just thought that Mercedes would have gone with super softs as well, and they wouldn't have gone for the mediums.
Uh-huh.
But if they did know, if they knew Mercedes were putting mediums on, and they then chose to do like a contra strategy and go completely the other way with it, because they had the pace to race Mercedes, they shouldn't have attacked the rest of the race like a team that thought they were behind Mercedes,
like Williams did in Britain
last
year.
Because they had the pace, they had the raw pace in the car to race Mercedes. So why not just go at the same game?
Yeah,
they didn't need to take them. If anything, the soft tyre was the gamble. Do you know what I mean? If the mediums would have gone off the cliff, yeah, they'd have all had to change tyres.
So go soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, both Mercedes and both Ferrari would have had to come in the pits. There was no reason to have to go that ultra aggressive strategy when the car was fast.
Mm.
I could have accepted that if it was Red Bull. No, if it was Red Bull that knows they haven't got the car to match Mercedes.
Well, Red Bull did go quite aggressive with their strategy after the pits. I think they ran a soft and then a super soft, didn't they? And Danny Ric ended up finishing fourth, which is a great result for Red Bull.
Yeah. I mean, he did say at one point he was thinking, maybe I can get third.
Yeah.
One side note as far as that goes, and the pace that the Renault Works team had as well, the steps forward...
In that Renault engine?
In that engine. And considering I sent you list some of numbers, tokens. Didn't they, with the tokens?
No, they haven't used hardly any.
They've used like four.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, like, and I think I said at the when I messaged you is that if Red Bull finish well, which they did, now, by the time they get upgrades on that engine, Red Bull will win a race this year on pure pace.
They will. Yeah. Back end of the season, I think you'll be looking at.
Might not be in the first race.
Watch out for them in the last.
Although, let's be honest, with a fourth place finish in the first race, you have the credentials to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like when you don't finish at all.
No.
In the first race.
Mm.
I also like to say I stand by what I said last week as well. In fact, Haas scored points in their first Grand Prix with a new car.
Yeah.
Manor are a fucking shambles.
Well, they didn't even get Harry Anto back out after the red flag. The
Harry Anto garage.
Harry Anto garage. Yeah, Rio didn't get a chance to dance across the sand.
No.
No, they said it was their fault. There was a problem with the drive system somewhere. And you could tell that something was going to go wrong when everybody was getting in the cars and they were putting the tyres back on and his car was in the garage and he was just sat there having a chat with his mechanics. Right, okay. Normal service appears to have been resumed. And then, the first thing that happened after the restart...
Well, a couple of laps in, wasn't it? Yeah.
Kimi Raikkonen, master of understatement.
Something has happened.
No, the best thing was when it first came across, he says, "I don't know, I've broke something." That was what he said, it was great.
Yeah, there's fire leaping out of the airbox. Something's happened.
Yeah. Casually coasts into the pits with smoke billowing from his airbox. Pulls into the pit box. Fire comes out of his car. Nobody picks up a fire extinguisher for a good few seconds. Kimmy doesn't move, just sits in his car. Eventually, somebody comes along with a fire extinguisher. They finish doing what they're doing. Kimmy doesn't really care, undoes his seatbelt, gets out, looks back at his car, goes, "Oh well."
But the best thing about all that was the fact that not only did he pull up to his garage, he even still went past his garage and turned a bit to make it easier to back it in.
Yeah. He knew what was happening, but. He's called the Iceman for a reason, even in the extreme heat. He managed to stay very cool.
Fire cannot melt him.
No. He can't buy luck, though, can he?
No, he can't. No.
I really hope this isn't sort of...
You joke about Alonso and Jensen being the unluckiest drivers in Formula 1.
He's up there.
At the moment, yeah.
See, I like everybody with a soul. I do. I love Kimi. This car obviously suits him much better than what he's had in the past. He was quick this weekend, you know.
He was doing all right.
He qualified well. He was up there with Vettel, putting in similar times until he had his pop.
I'm just waiting for 2 weeks' time. He's going to get to Bahrain. He's going to put an absolute storming qualifying in. He's going to get on pole. They're going to be sat there for the grid.
Car's going to explode.
No, it's going to come over the radio, "Kimi, we're going to have to retire the car." Why? There's a flock of owls decided to nest in the airbox. They're a protected species, and we're not allowed to disturb them.
Yeah.
Can you get out very quietly?
No problem.
Okay.
And then in the post-race interview, "Kimmy, what happened with the owls? Sometimes these things happen."
You guys need to look after the owls.
Yeah, sometimes you do. Dangerous species get into your car and you have to look after them. The Iceman cometh.
Oh,
certainly,
yes.
He did.
Somebody, going back to somebody who wasn't cool, the whole Toro Rosso thing, when you had both cars trying to get past Palmer.
Torogate.
Palmer, who I thought, for a rookie...
Brilliant driving.
Yeah. For the first time he'd been racing in a year.
My driver of the weekend. Oh, my drive through the day, I should say.
He was doing a fantastic job holding him off, mm-hmm. and they could not get past him for ages.
Yeah.
When they did. He
was keeping up.
Yeah.
He only started to drop off in the last few laps when his tyres went.
Yeah.
I'd actually argue that if he hadn't have give... I almost said Alju Suari then. No, I'll just
swear. Who? Lee's had a crash, he's woken up and he thinks it's 2012.
if he hadn't have given Carlos Sainz such a hard time when he was getting past, and if he just conceded the place knowing it was going to happen and slotted in behind him, I don't think he'd have lost the place to Verstappen.
No, I think he would. I'm with you there. I think he would have hung on to it because he just got on the wrong side of the track. He'd lost grip.
He was on the dirty, he'd have had all shit all over his tyres.
Yeah, and that just made it easier for Verstappen to get past. Although Verstappen probably reckons that he would have got past anyway.
Yeah, Verstappen just thinks all he needs to do is get close to that Renault and he was just going to go through it, round it, or over it.
Yeah.
When they had that mild contact, didn't they, the penultimate corner with a few laps to go. To be fair to Max, he spun it back round and he was back on Carlos's tail within a lap. He was, so he did have pace, but is it a problem with Formula 1 not being able to follow, or is it just the fact that Max Verstappen's a bit of an impatient tool?
I think he's a bit of an impatient tool.
Yeah, I think he is as well. He's great talent, fantastic at overtaking, widening the show us again what he can do. He's overtaken superior cars last year. Many occasions. Why didn't he just do that again?
What I thought, and I should have put it on the live blog when we were doing it, but he was making rookie mistakes in the first race of his second season when he only made one real rookie mistake last year in Monaco when he took Grosjean apart.
Yeah.
And Grosjean carried on.
But that was a rookie driving.
Yeah.
From the looks of things. If you'd have seen the three of them, you'd have been asked to say which one's the new driver, and which two are in the second season. You'd have put Palmer and Sainz as the second season drivers.
Yeah, Verstappen as the rookie.
Yeah,
yeah.
I still think that the way Verstappen drives, because there was he seemed even more leery than he did last year for me in Australia.
He qualified. Brilliant.
Yeah. That's grand. But I mean, racing.
Yeah.
Every lap can't be a qualifying lap.
No.
And I just think it's the same way. I know I was a bit wrong, but when Marquez in the MotoGP was winning fucking everything, you would watch him and go, there was a crash with your name on it, a massive crash,
and it happened.
Yeah, and I think I think there's a wall somewhere that's got Verstappen booked in for somewhere, probably during this season.
Yeah.
I don't believe that you can continue to drive like Verstappen is and be successful.
There's only so much pushing you can do before you push too hard.
Before you push it to past
the
level.
Lewis had that massive crash at Spa. Yeah, I'm not saying this means that he's never going to be a great Formula One driver, because if there's anything that I saw in Australia, it's the fact that Carlos Sainz and Verstappen are going to be around for a very long time, and they're going to be in big teams, and they're going to have many wins and
podiums. There could be 20 years left in both of them.
Yeah, easily.
Although
I don't like Verstappen's attitude, I'm not saying that right place, right time. He's not a world champion, in the making. But I don't believe that. Every other corner he was locking brakes up, and
driving like a rookie.
But a rookie with red mist.
Yeah. But a rookie with a whole season under his belt.
That's the thing.
He's not a rookie now.
No, but that's what I'm saying. He was driving like one.
Even both Toro Rosso's locking wheels up and stuff like that, following Julian Palmer. Julian Palmer's the rookie with the shit tyres that point during the race. But I don't know.
Yeah, Palmer looked better than Sainz and Verstappen for a while. I mean, Verstappen can say what he likes about Carlos Sainz. Carlos Sainz is just as quick as Max Verstappen. He's just less spectacular when it comes to making passes and. Mm-hmm. He's more
calculated.
Yeah. He's more Prost, whereas Verstappen is more Senna, if you want to really go that far with the comparisons.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Cross was calculated and took his chances when they came to him. Senna was, I'm going to create a chance wherever I can.
There's three quarters of a gap there. That might be a full gap by the time I get to it.
Yeah.
We need to stop that analogy, you know. Because nowadays there's about 15 Prosts and Sennas on the grid. Because
Lewis Hamilton drives a lot like Alain Prost for somebody who's a massive Ayrton Senna fan.
Yeah. No, but when you think about the... we've had Button and Hamilton... That have been compared to Prost and Senna.
As teammates.
We've had Button and Alonso, which have been compared to Prost and Senna. We've had Rosberg and Hamilton. And now there's Carlos Sainz and Verstappen.
Yeah, Rosberg and...
I don't know...
With the rivalry.
With the Button and Hamilton thing, the force... The whole forcedness of the, oh, we're great mates and we really get on and we do lots of interviews together. That was more like Terry and June.
It's Toffel and Dean of the Formula One world.
Yeah. can't go much further without saying what a great job Haas and particularly Roman Grosjean did.
Yeah, I mean, they were, I'm not going to beat around the bush, they were lucky that Grosjean stopped on the lap where the red flag came out.
Mm-hmm.
That did help them an awful lot, which did hinder other drivers on the track. But regardless, their car was on pace. It was quite quick. And they managed a sixth place finish.
Well, even if they're on the back of the midfield and the tail end, at least they're on the back of the fucking midfield. You know, if you take the red flag off.
They were ahead.
This model works. You know, this model of coming into Formula One, if you're a new team, it works.
Mm.
And I hope it's...
A two-year development rather than...
Well, it's not just that. Two-year development, getting very cozy with the manufacturer as well. I hope other teams... Because, I do hope as well that Haas, no matter... They're obviously very matey with Ferrari, but... In respect to that, Haas obviously has bigger plans than being Ferrari's junior team.
Toro Rory.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Gene Haas say at one point last year that...
He'll want to stand on their own feet for too long.
Yeah, that they would be targeting a title within the first 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, next year is going to be the big one for them because obviously most of last year they spent in Ferrari's development centre and wind tunnel.
Yeah.
They've not got as much access this year and they've got to abide by...
By the rules,
as they're now an active team. But
I think the rules shake-up could help them next year, though. You know, as long as they've made the right choices with personnel and they've got enough brains and ideas there when these new rules come in, you know.
Yeah, they have the shyest strategy manager in Formula One.
Yeah, Ruth, who refused to
speak to Ted. She just sort of scuttled past him holding half a dozen bottles of water and he's there talking to her from the pit wall right into the garage, and she's just running away. She wasn't having it. Or maybe she was incredibly thirsty. That's why she was carrying six bottles of water, and she couldn't actually speak until she'd had a drink.
She's quite hot as well.
I was waiting for that. But no, they did good.
Very good,
to put in football terms. We can't delay it any further. McLaren. Jensen had his race effectively bollocked by the red flag.
Yeah,
so did Alonso.
So did Alonso. Alonso more so than Jensen, but I think more frustratingly for Jensen because...
They looked a bit better in qualifying.
It was the same thing. Button had the wrong type of wheels on. Alonso didn't have enough.
No, that's it. But they looked better in qualifying. They haven't made major steps forward, but they haven't dropped back from where they were at the end of last year. They're sort of just where they were at the end of last year.
I think the next race will give us a better read on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to say because the strategy got completely messed up because Jensen had just stopped just before Alonso's crash.
Yeah.
Lee was getting excited because he was up to sixth and then found out that he hadn't stopped.
Yeah.
Then from there just dropped off, but only a lap down.
I do think that between 6th and 8th, would have been possible for them, you know, if they were just racing.
That's pretty much what the team have said.
Is it?
Yeah.
Give me a job. Yeah. I can be your shy female strategist.
Yeah,
you've got a job. It's doing podcasts with us.
Oh, shit. One day we'll get paid for it. Yeah, according to Eric Boullier, we're quietly encouraged by the progress we've made over the winter, and we firmly believe that given a less confused qualifying session and an incident-free race, we'll be in a position to score points in Grand Prix to come. Jensen said the car wasn't too bad, but they made some imperfect strategy calls.
Yeah.
And the red flag coming after the first stop, and then on the second stop, had to go to the backup tyres.
Which everyone else was already on.
Mm. And that just compromised everything, and he was at the back of the queue.
I'm surprised that that they didn't put the medium on Jensen, and I'm surprised, you know, the teams that went with the softer tyre further at the back didn't go medium, because that would seem like the gamble. Well, you know, if you were back at the back anyway. It would seem like the way to go, just try and one stop it.
Yeah, I mean, one positive that came out of it for Jensen, I would definitely say, 8th fastest lap of the day.
Yeah, which is not rubbish at all.
2.687 seconds off the fastest lap.
Yeah, but...
But it was only 2.6 seconds off the fastest lap.
Yeah, not 2.6 years.
Yeah.
It's just 2.8 seconds, that's 3 seconds. It's light years in Formula One, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But let's look at the positives for a second. There were another 11 drivers, at least, doing slower laps at that point in the race.
Yeah,
behind Jensen Button.
I'm all for positives. I want this to be a posicast. But I don't know. It's all the big talk that. McLaren had going into the season that we all got very excited about.
Well, I don't know, they started downplaying it towards the end of the second test.
Do you know what I realised? They'd started down, not even just that, but all these rumours of them finding extra horsepower and stuff like this stuff all came out when they were romancing the new sponsors.
No, but they did find the extra horsepower, because when Martin Brundle was talking to Jensen Button on the grid, said, "You're not going to get scared now, are you, by the... No, you're not going to get scared by cars coming at you 20, 30 mile an hour faster towards the end of the straight." But
they were doing that anyway. No, did you not see that when Button was up there, they were just driving around him at one point before he stopped, you know, before Alonso's crash?
Because his tyres went knackered. But the...
Don't forget, he had been out a lot longer than everyone else. He started on a set of softs.
Mm-hmm.
Which by that point he'd done 15 laps on.
Yeah.
And other drivers were coming at him on...
Fresh tyres.
Fresh, 2-lap-old soft tyres.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to be a lot faster than him, because he's trying to hang on to the road. That's why they were driving around him. It wasn't that the car didn't have the pace, it's just that the tyres had gone.
I do hope not, but I still look at that. It still appears to be... like the worst engine in Formula One by a reasonable chunk, especially with Renault seemingly taking a step forwards. And they used quite a lot of tokens as well.
Yeah, I think they did use quite a lot of tokens, but
I'd be interested to see the speed traps between the Toro Rossos and the McLaren.
But they're a lot further down the road than they were this time last year. So
it's a better position.
They're pretty much where they were at the end of last year.
Do you still think there's hope for my £25?
Not at the moment.
Okay. No. Mr. Hasegawa, who is the new Mr. Arai.
Yeah.
I'm pleased that throughout this weekend's practice sessions and qualifying, we were able to see the improvement of the whole package. So the new guy appears to be happy, or unhappy, and more importantly, the new guy appears to actually want to say something and be quoted.
I think he's got his packages mixed up, and it's that all Kevin that is. It's a breakdown like language barrier, and he was just trying to say that the car is complete penis.
Yeah, okay. You said you wanted this to be a positive podcast. Three tires.
Yeah.
That's a good call. Well done.
It's a great idea. Accident, that, isn't it, I think.
Three tires during the race. Which is obviously the two of the three compounds. Yeah. It worked brilliantly. Especially in the situation that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago.
But what a shame, though, that the... we didn't really get to see how everything was going to run properly. I think when we get another race without a red flag, it's going to be great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's giving them options.
What are they calling that third tyre?
Option. Backup. Prime option.
Backup.
Backup.
That's why Jason called it backup.
Yes.
Right. Prime option backup. Fine. Okay.
Yeah. The other one.
Oh, we need to be more like NASCAR. Because it'd be like the wild card tyre or something, wouldn't it, if it was in NASCAR?
Tiger tyre!
Yeah, but these tyres are designed to turn right as well as left.
Oh, shit, okay.
Yeah, sorry to our NASCAR fan. Turn off now!
We don't mean the podcast.
Yeah, we do. Fuck off in your stupid turning left series.
That's a good thing about IndyCar this year. There's more proper circuits than there are ovals. You'll get to see Sebastian Bourdais turn left when he's meant to turn right.
Is he still sponsored by McDonald's?
Yes.
Oh, God, Lord.
Is it just me, or whenever I see IndyCar round circuits, it seems to be like Formula One in the early to mid-90s when it was just a full-on procession?
That's usually because there's a yellow flag and they're all behind the safety car, because they still have full course yellows on the full circuits anyway.
Oh, right, okay.
You just keep tuning in at the wrong time.
Or the right time.
Or the right time. There is a right time. I'm watching a lot more IndyCar at the moment. Because
they use better tracks?
No, because there's sod all else on at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night.
Is that what time it's sort of on, is it?
Yeah, depends where the race is, but you know the F1's well finished by then. It's either that or Major League Soccer.
Fair enough. Whenever I turn IndyCar on, it always seems to be Phillip Island, and I'm like, yeah, after like six races, I'm thinking, like, do they go anywhere else? It's just like the Phillip Island series.
I don't think they've raced there for years.
Have they not?
Race in Phillip Island in Australia for many years.
What am I thinking?
Are you thinking about superbikes?
No, what circuit? I must be thinking of a different circuit. No, it doesn't matter. I was thinking of a different IndyCar circuit.
Because if you went quiet enough, we'd be able to hear the cogs turning. So, getting towards the end of the race, the pit stops worked out. Mercedes just took off. Mm. Vettel did a very...
Well, they sat and waited.
Vettel did a very convincing job of trying to chase Lewis down.
Until the penultimate lap.
Until the penultimate lap when he pushed a little bit too hard.
Yeah. And binned it off the track slightly, and to the delight of a lot of the Australian fans for some bizarre reason. I think it's because of his rivalry with Ricciardo. I think the Australians don't forget that. They like to hold a grudge. So with his rivalry with Danny Ric a couple of years ago, giving him a bit of stick when he got something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's very rare for Sebastian to get something wrong, but he did come on the radio straight away and we got a beep. Sorry, guys.
The FIA beep machine definitely had a workout this weekend to say that Kimi didn't do more than a third of the race.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, other drivers appear to have got the swear filter fitted as well.
Yeah, Verstappen and Vettel. I think, I might be wrong, but I think that it's instant fine if you swear over the team radio. I don't know exactly what the fine is, but I think it's an instant fine. So it'd be interesting to see if you're fined every time you say an expletive, because if you are, Max Verstappen will have had his pocket money taken away from him, and Vettel will just have to pay a little bit of small change, I would imagine.
The lack of radio communication, or as we thought. That's a rant that's coming up in a minute. There's not meant to be as many radio communications, but what we heard was mostly beeps.
Yeah.
Now, talking of radio communication, they changed the rules an hour before the bloody start.
They did.
I didn't even realise this.
Because you missed the start and the build-up.
Yeah.
Where rules were getting dropped left, right and centre. I mean, the...
tear-off rule.
The tear-off rule. I mean, in the space of the hour and a half build-up show that we got before the race started, three major rules actually got dropped by F1 or the FIA or whoever. First one was they announced that qualifying was reverting back to normal. Second one, the clampdown on radio use. And you only got these 25 points. Oh, well, it's now 26 points. You can discuss strategy.
Yeah.
Which led to that really funny interview with Rob Smedley.
Yeah.
Where, I can't remember if we talked about this before we started recording.
That, to be fair, that makes sense that they should be able to talk about whether they're coming in for a pit stop or not.
Well, they're allowed to talk about that. It's actual race strategy about what they're going to do, who... how they're going to handle the next few laps. I mean, Hammer Time was banned. That was the kind of strategy talk that they weren't allowed.
Now they are.
Now they are.
Right. See, I agree with them being able to talk to the driver about their race. You know, about what they're doing, about what the tyres are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, maybe keep it so they can't talk about the other teams and what's going on around them. But I don't know, It's one of those things, isn't it? If you do either have it or don't.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to have a radio ban, just get rid of the fucking radios.
Oh, just have the radios for emergency use only.
Yeah, and then the chat will be, oh well, if we get rid of the radios, these cars are very difficult to drive. So you know, it's the drivers won't know what they're supposed to be doing with the different systems.
Well, this is the thing. You know, when somebody tells
them to build cars that are different.
Yeah, but if like an engineer tells a driver to push, for example, Pete Bonington tells Lewis Hamilton, it's Hammer Time. Why not say, all right, it's Hammer Time, or yeah, push hard now for the next few laps, but they're not allowed to tell them which engine maps to use, what fuel settings to put it on, you know, richness of fuel or whatever, and power harvesting for the power unit. You can tell them to push, but then it's up to the driver to work out which is the best option
mm-hmm.
to choose.
Yeah.
In order to push.
No, I
that makes more sense to me than like, okay, Lewis, strap mode 7, turn the fuel down to 3, and brake bias forward 5%.
But the problem is when you
because that's telling him how to drive the car.
Yeah, no, but as far as the fuel map and stuff goes, I can accept that as well because you're. Because that we have the different engine modes, if there was no engine modes, and it was just you got in the car and pressed the go pedal, that'd be fine. But when they're already on the limit of fuel when they get in the car, you know, for what they can complete the race with, you can't expect, and nobody if there's someone listening to this podcast that disagrees with this, they're a moron. There's no one that can expect a driver to do that sort of maths to work out how their fuel is going to be used over the course of a race when they've got different engine maps. It's impossible.
No, they shouldn't work it out, but they should be told if fuel is becoming critical, then it's up to the driver to work out what engine map they want to use to try and save fuel. And if that fuel saving's okay, or no, you need to save more, all right, well, you turn it down even further then.
Yeah, but that's silly, because it's just like, that's not saying... then they're still allowed to give them the information, but it's got to be like multiple choice.
No, you just have to tell them whether or not... Like,
got on 2? No, not 2. Got on 3? No, 3's too much. Got on 1? 1, that's fine.
No, because you can't tell that you all you would have to tell them is fuel saving, so it's then up to the driver to power. You know, the hundreds of options they've got on the steering wheel. Mm-hmm. You look at all the buttons and dials they've got. You can there'll be so many options that they can choose. It won't just be a case of just turn that down, turn that up.
Oh yeah, I realise that, but I'm just saying that I don't think
no, sorry,
I don't think it's possible to do it from inside the cockpit. That's all.
The thing is,
I think that's what they what it needs though. It needs to be more the driver.
That's fine, but in that case, they need to be told in advance that right. Well, you can't do this anymore, or we're going to ban radios. You need to go and build a car.
Yeah.
Which suits that environment.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when the cars were less complicated, there wasn't as much radio traffic.
Yeah, of course. Because, well, it was a go button, you know, and then there was a fuel gauge, and I'd imagine some sort of turbo setting, you know, for the cars.
Mm.
So they'd know that they could use their turbo for how many seconds during a race, and then there's no more of that to be had.
Yeah.
But the problem is now, with all the different systems on the cars, everything needs a readout, and you don't physically have the room in a Formula One cockpit to put the readouts in, and that's what's going on the pit wall.
No, but that's effectively
the dashboard of the car is what the engineers are looking at in the pit consoles.
That's where Lee's wipeout style Formula One cars, where we have canopies on them, those canopies have heads up displays.
I was waiting for this.
Yeah, but if they do go canopies, that's what you'll get. You'll get heads up displays. That's why Red Bull are so keen on that Batman screen style thing, because they can put a heads up display on it.
Yeah. Mm. Talking of things like that, say the jagged windscreen on the Sauber?
Yeah.
You don't get as many cars using windscreens these days.
No, Rosberg uses a jagged windscreen.
Mm.
He was the first one to have one. He had a jagged windscreen all last year.
Oh, right, okay. I missed that.
Did not understand that at all.
Yeah.
Because it's usually like an inch.
What it is to disturb the airflow that hits the drivers, and he thinks that if it's jagged, it breaks the air up, and it's easier on the wind hitting him in the face.
Ah, right. That's why the first two cars that I saw go out after I saw the Sauber with the jagged windscreen was a McLaren and a Manor, and obviously they don't need to worry about the amount of air that's coming into the driver at those speeds.
No. No, Fernando was more worried about the
gravel rash.
Yeah, I bet his windscreen's jagged.
Yeah.
But just moving back onto rule changes, the other one that got dropped just before the race was the new rule that had been brought in about drivers can't throw away the visor tear-offs on track. They were meant to either hand them to a mechanic in the pits or put them safely in the cockpit.
So do we know what flavour of bullshit this is for? Is it genuinely a littering thing?
No, it was a concern over them getting stuck in other cars behind.
In the air boxes.
Yeah, one got stuck in an air box at some point last year.
Alonso got one in a brake in one of his brake ducts.
Was it a brake duct?
Yeah, it was in Barcelona, and when he retired there.
Right.
Yeah. And that was blamed on a tear off flying.
I remember a tear off going into his brake duct. Now you mention it, but like this is something. I know drivers in the past have been accused of throwing tear-offs off when someone's been following them, hoping it goes in the airbox. It's just fucking ridiculous, isn't it?
I mean, what the hell are you meant to do with them? You know, you can't put, like you said before we started recording, you can't put a loose bit of plastic floating around the cockpit.
No, and anyone that drives knows how fucking annoying it can be to have something flapping around, you know, in the car.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, what's next? Like, the water bottle can't be connected to the car. They've just got to leave it rolling around. So they've got a bottle of Evian kicking about the bottom.
For anyone that missed the Guy Martin and David Coulthard thing, apparently Damon Hill used to have cold tea in his water bottle and he'd have a hot cuppa by the end of the race.
David Coulthard?
Mm.
Yeah. I know that.
So, interesting little bit of trivia there.
Yeah.
Right, what was I... I have completely lost my thread here and I can't see the running order.
New drivers.
New drivers, that's the one. Rio Haryanto first, because he did the least.
Yeah.
A bit anonymous.
Completely anonymous. We have no idea how good he is or bad he is, because Manor screwed up his race.
Yeah.
He stayed out of trouble.
Unfortunately... Didn't qualify last.
No, qualified ahead of Wehrlein.
And then got penalised.
Yeah,
I was surprised he qualified in Bell.
He's the first driver to score penalty points this year.
Managed to get two penalty points before he'd even raced.
He was released into Grosjean, wasn't he?
Yeah. Now, I've heard people saying, "Oh, it was the team's fault. They shouldn't have let him go by the penalising him." Well, he came out of the garage, stopped, and then started again and went into Grosjean. Right. I'm sorry, he should have looked.
Yeah.
Or should have paid attention to if somebody was walking.
If he stops and then goes again at that point, the team have nothing to do with that accident.
Yeah. So he didn't look where he was going, basically. No. I still think he is on for our new pastor of the season.
I think you're right. I think
where's Rio Harry off to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will Rio dance across the sand?
Yeah.
And I also think we will be seeing Alexander Rossi in a manner racing at some points of this season.
At the detriment of Rio Haryanto.
Yeah, because there's 11 races that he's going to be there for when he's not on IndyCar duty.
I would agree with you, apart from the fact that if Rio's in that car, he's very young, he's got very little racing experience. That means one thing to me, that brother is bringing the Benjamins.
Oh yeah, of course he is.
So,
but can't remember who it was. I think it was UGE Day, going back to the Super Aguri team. He was that terrible. He was bringing in sponsorship.
Yeah.
But he was that terrible. They revoked his super license.
I will see you. What's his name?
UGE Day.
And raise you, Pastor Maldonado.
Ide wasn't bringing in that much sponsorship. That's the difference.
Was he breaking that many cars?
No.
Maldonado at least managed to qualify for races in the 107%.
Right.
UGE Day was a little bit of a Rossit tosser.
Nobody has ever accused Pastor Maldonado of being slow or not knowing where the accelerator is. That is not the problem.
Back to new drivers.
Pascal Wehrlein. Really solid debut.
Pretty solid. Did finish last of all the runners, but again was a victim of circumstance of the red flag. No, but he started brilliantly. He was up to, was it 12th, 13th at one point?
Got up to 12th or 13th with not just due to pit stops, there were some overtakes in there.
Yeah.
And
he had a flyer of a first lap.
He was looking competent.
Yeah, he was. Well, and then he got caught out by the red flag and unfortunately finished last. But he finished.
He finished last. He was a lap down, which was effectively a lap down over 40 laps. Over 40 laps last season, Amana would have been two or three laps down.
Three at least.
Because we were looking at sort of four laps for a full race distance.
Yeah.
So he got the car working, and it shows that there's been a little bit of improvement in manner, and they've now got a better, more competent driver.
And Rosberg only passed the back markers with, was it two laps to go, three laps to go?
About that.
So it wasn't like it was halfway through the race or after the first few laps or whatever.
Yeah, wouldn't the red flag have something to do with that as well?
It would have done as well, yeah. It would have helped a little bit, but even still.
But
Posicast, come on, Lee.
Yeah, Rosberg didn't start lapping the back markers until after 37 laps.
I'd also say that maybe them going on the medium has made that different as well, because he was obviously slower than he would have been if he was on a soft, super soft strategy.
Yeah.
So.
But then Vettel passed him around about the same time, and he was on the soft, super soft, and he had a bit of clear air in front of him for a while he was chasing Lewis down, and again. The back markers weren't getting lapped every other lap.
I hope not. And like you say, with Wehrlein getting up there on the start.
I'm trying to defend Manor as much as possible, just because they were the first team to give us media accreditation. You do realise this.
Yeah, they need people talking about them. But the thing with Manor is, for me, I want them to do well. That's not the point. And I hope that they've got a car where somebody can outdrive it. That's what you want from a backmarker team, isn't it, really? They're not going to be up there all the time, but you know on that race, all of a sudden, if someone can do a Damon Hill in Hungary and Arrows, then you know you've got someone special behind the car.
Or a Mark Webber in Australia in a Minardi.
Or a Fernando Alonso in a Minardi in Australia.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all. I...
That was a box of business cards being thrown off a mantelpiece by Podcat. We're going to leave that in. Cat shaming.
Well, if anybody was falling asleep listening to my dulcet tones...
now they're awake.
You'll be awake now. Jolyon Palmer, then.
The best of the new drivers. Yeah, as we've already said, managed to hold off the Toro Rossos. Didn't look like the rookie driver in the battle between him and some two drivers who are in their second season. In a newish car, should we say. It's an evolution of the Enstone Lotus with a Renault engine in it, when it probably should have had a Mercedes engine in it. Solid-ish performance from Renault and a very solid performance from Palmer. One place outside the points on his debut.
Yeah.
So you can't ask for him for more solid than that. If you wanted him to be spectacular, he probably would have not finished the race. But he still finished ahead of his teammate, Kevin Magnussen, so he's done very well.
Who had to unlap himself as well at one point.
Absolutely, yeah.
Early puncture, but no, he had a really good debut, and I'm excited to see what he can do for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and he also had qualified K-Bag. He did. Forget that either.
He's definitely showing a lot of potential. Right, so with the start of the new season and teams being more vocal and interviews being given, it is now the return of Captain Obvious.
It is. I only have one nomination this week.
Well, we'll go with We have got another one.
You got another one?
Yeah. My one is Kimi. Something happened.
Kimi Raikkonen, something. Mine is the other Ferrari driver, Sebastian Vettel, post-race, saying that Ferrari's strategy may have held him back a little bit.
Diplomatic?
Yeah, the tyre strategy might not have helped.
Diplomatic, but... blindingly obvious.
Yeah, the two of them. Which one do you give the award to?
I think.
I haven't got one.
So in that case, you decide on this week's Captain Obvious.
Tire strategy might not have been the best, or something's happened. I'm on fire.
I'm going with Kimi.
Kimi Raikkonen, you are this week's Captain Obvious.
If there's any chance to give Kimi anything, you should have it.
Yep. Well done, Kimi Raikkonen.
Well, I think that about covers everything for this week.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Including the floor with business cards.
Yeah. Yep. Silly cat.
Yes. We'll be back.
Grow on trees, you know.
We will be back next week. Not growing on trees. We'll be back next week for a preview of Bahrain and anything that crops up in the meantime. If you're listening, Dan, get well soon.
Yep.
And hope you're back with us next week.
Mm-hmm. Make sure you use the ointment. And when it stops itching, it's fine.
See you in a week's time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.